How Curious is sponsored by the Oklahoma City Community Foundation.
Former First Lady Donna Nye has always had a passion for leveling the playing field for Oklahoma citizens who are developmentally disabled. A group of her closest friends decided to establish the Donna Nye Foundation in honor of the commitment and work she was doing in this area.
We've worked with the Nyes for so long that we really have a feel for their passion and their heart for giving.
If you care about causes that help citizens with developmental disabilities, join us. The Oklahoma City Community Foundation will help you make it happen.
Hello and welcome to KGOU's How Curious. I'm Rachel Hopkins.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Rachel.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Amy.
The place where I've just arrived is the Moore Lindsay Historic House Museum in central Norman, Oklahoma. The museum manager, Amy Pence, has kindly welcomed me in.
I'm excited. I've been meaning to come to this place ever since I moved here. And I kept not coming and not coming. And then I thought, well, I'll make a program about it. And that way I'll definitely come.
I love that.
So this episode is the result. And in it, I explore what this house tells us about life in the young city of Norman well over a century ago.
So we are standing in the entry hall here. And these photographs are photos of the families who lived here in the house.
You can see copies of these and other items discussed on the episode webpage. Just search for KGOU and How Curious.
We usually start out with this photo here because it gives me a good opportunity to explain the name of the museum.
The photo is sepia-toned and shows two couples plus a young girl in Victorian dress. One couple is standing beside a horse and buggy, and the other couple plus the child are sitting in the buggy. The corner of a house is also visible.
We are named after the two couples you can see in the photo. The ones standing up are William and Agnes Moore, and they had this house built for them here in 1899. But they only lived in this house for about 8 years, and then they moved to Oklahoma City. But they sold the house to Mrs. Moore's niece, and you can see her and her husband there. They're Daisy and Harry Lindsay, and also their daughter Agnes. And people often ask if this is this house. It is not. We believe it is probably the house that one of the two couples lived in Missouri. They did come together to Oklahoma from Missouri.
From the spacious entrance hall, we moved into a large, light, and airy room through a pocket doorway.
All right, so this room is, we call it the formal parlor. It was the room that was meant for the guests, so it was meant to be the most impressive room in the house. Most of the furniture that is in the house is donated, but it is representative of what you would see in a home of this socioeconomic level in this area.
And what kind of socioeconomic level would that be?
That's a great question. So for Norman at the time, this was incredibly wealthy. They spent $5,000 to build this house at a time when the average home in Norman cost about $500 to build.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was definitely a grand home, one of the first really large homes in Norman. But they were only upper middle class. They weren't crazy wealthy. You didn't have that super, super high level of wealth here in Norman.
And are we talking about the Moores or the Lindsays or both of them?
Both of them, actually, yes.
And where did they get their money from?
I do not know, actually.
Know.
No. Okay. I know that when Mr. Moore listed his occupation, he just called himself a capitalist. And from the things I have learned about how he made money here in Norman, that's a pretty accurate description. He bought and sold property. He made loans to people. He would sometimes buy a plot of farmland and pay someone to, you know, plant it. And then once the grain was ready, he would sell it and then sell the farmland. So just different opportunities for someone who already has money to make it more money without having to do a lot of work. So capitalist seems like a good description for that.
And do we know why they came here from Missouri?
I don't know for sure, but my guess is that it was related to the land run. Now, they did not come in the land run. We believe they came right around 1895.
Of course, the land run in this area was in 1889.
For the people who claimed land in the land run, you did not get the deed for that land for 5 years. So right around 1894, 1895, people are finally getting the deed to that land and able to then sell it. So we think that Mr. Moore, being, you know, having his fingers in that real estate pie, probably came seeing an opportunity to make a little more money.
The land run basically turned Norman into an almost instant city, but the first glimmerings of it date back a couple of decades more. Here's local historian Andy Rieger.
government surveyors came through what became the state of Oklahoma in 1870-something. In that survey crew was a young Kentucky man named Abner Norman, and he was made head of the survey crew, and they camped at a spring down by where now Lindsay Street and Classen, where the U-Haul, there's a spring back there, and there was an elm tree there, and perhaps in jest, his workers burned or carved Norman's camp on one of the limbs of the tree. Years later, when the railroad came through there, they were looking for what to name it, and they remembered seeing on the tree it said Norman's Camp, so it became Norman. But that's really how Norman developed. It developed as a railroad town.
That name stop on the railroad was crucial when it came to the land run, which took place only a couple of years after the tracks were completed.
The federal government wanted people to move west, and they had the land from the Louisiana purchases and different areas, and they wanted settlers, and the way to get settlers was to offer them a carrot, and the carrot was a quarter section of land, 160 acres, if you would farm it, build a home on it, and stay for a number of years, you could have that free and clear with no mortgage.
According to Sue Schrems, who's written several books about Norman history, it wasn't just prospective farmers who were lured by that carrot.
Before the land run, the Norman Town Company out of Purcell, a bunch of businessmen got together and knew exactly where they were going to stake their land, and they were businessmen. And you'd have some guy might do the drugstore, the hardware store. And so they came in and they staked their, they didn't stake land outside to grow anything on. They staked their businesses. And so you have kind of two different kinds of people then moving into the area. Those that move in and establish a farm, they needed those businesses.
From 1889 onwards, Norman grew quickly. Here's Andy Rieger again.
Several things happened that caused people to want to come here. The major thing being the university was located here. So think about this. We had a town in 1889. A couple years later, the university came here. A few years after that, we had a major state mental hospital here. So we had quite a bit going on.
And the university, how did that come to be here? I've never really thought about how does a university get started before, but yeah, how did that happen?
So the territorial legislature looked at different towns and decided what they would get. For example, McAlester, Oklahoma, got the prison. Guthrie originally had the capital. Stillwater got an A&M college, a mechanical and industrial. Edmond got a teacher's college, and the University of Oklahoma was awarded to Norman. It was a great prize. You would take that over a prison any day.
And that prestigious win was made much of in the pamphlet put out by some boosters in the young city, encouraging others to move here. Although it was written after the Moores and Lindsay's relocation to Norman, it gives a great sense of the excitement generated by this growing community.
Norman, a city of the first class, of business, social, and moral standing, as the principal educational institution of the Great Southwest.
The booklet highlights plenty of other prized local resources.
It is rated as one of the principal corn, cotton, cattle, and grain markets in the new state, has a good fire department, excellent waterworks systems, one of the finest electric light plants in the state, a telephone system that is equal to the best, three national banks, and one of the largest and most finely equipped opera houses in the state.
There are several pages of this, including one containing the following passage.
Climactic conditions could not be more favorable than here. Being south of the blizzard, east of the drought, and directly in the temperate zone, men are happy and women good-looking and cheerful.
Climactic conditions could not be more favorable than here. Gosh, I'm not sure that's a sentiment often expressed about central Oklahoma. In any case, although the Moores moved on fairly rapidly to Oklahoma City, the Lindsays settled in for the long haul. Harry Lindsay seems to have been involved in a local lumber company. Daisy Lindsay didn't officially work outside of the home, although she was a keen gardener and apparently sold her roses downtown. Her love of flowers is still evident in the Moore Lindsay house today.
These two chairs are my favorite.
We're back in the formal parlor of the Moore Lindsay House, where Amy Pence is showing me two dining chairs.
They are actually family pieces. The seats of the chairs were hand-embroidered with different flower designs by Mrs. Lindsay. She originally did 5 chairs, but the other 3 are still in the possession of family members. So we just have these 2. But I love them, and I can't imagine the kind of lifestyle to have time to embroider your furniture.
Oh, that's funny. I'm in the middle of embroidering some of my furniture.
You? Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
This is actually true, but I'm not doing whole seats like Mrs. Lindsay, just some decorative patches to cover up the worst parts of my cat claw ravaged sofa.
And the house itself, does it belong to a particular style?
It is a Queen Anne style, or some people I have heard insist that it is actually a Princess Anne, because it is not, you know, they weren't that really upper class, they were that upper middle class, so it's not as grand or as decorative as a full queen. So some of the features that are pretty typical are an asymmetrical facade with the turret on one side and the wraparound porch, different gables and peaks to the roof, and lots of colors on the facade. This one, I believe, has 7 colors.
It's primarily yellow, isn't it?
It is.
And is that what it would have been back then?
It was. It's always been some shade of yellow, except I think during the 50s when it didn't belong to the family.
Okay.
But the city brought it back to yellow when they purchased it.
I love that bright red window there. That's gorgeous.
Isn't it amazing?
I've just noticed a beautiful round ruby red window.
Unfortunately, it's not the original glass anymore, but it has always been round and it's always been red. And I've been told that that is so that when the ladies are in this room with their guests, the light coming through gives them that rosy glow to their cheeks, because wearing visible makeup would have been a little scandalous.
So tell me, I'm standing now in front of the window. Do I suddenly look rosy-cheeked?
Oh, you do look a little bit more, yes. Now, I think by modern standards, it's not necessarily the most flattering light in the world. It's a little red, but
it is quite red. Yes, I feel a bit devilish, actually.
But I love the idea. Well, we can't wear makeup, so we have to find some way to make ourselves look a little better while we're here with our guests.
The Moore Lindsay House is in an area of Norman that's within easy walking distance of what would have been the primary business section of the city, around East Main Street. Remember, back then they didn't have cars. It earned the nickname of Silk Stocking Row because of its well-dressed and well-heeled residents, which included bankers and businessmen, and apparently a territorial governor at one point. Harry Lindsay died in the 1930s, but Daisy Lindsay lived until 1951, making her the longest resident of the house. And although she passed over 70 years ago, she's still remembered today, including by one of her great-grandchildren, Bill Wantland, who is himself an extremely spry 90-something. He spoke of her to me with much fondness.
She was just a wonderful, wonderful woman, and I spent a lot of time at the house. Sometimes we'd go there for the weekend, and so she would fix breakfast on Sunday morning for us. But she would always give us milk and cookies to tide us over till the breakfast was ready. And then after church, she'd have the Sunday dinner. And she almost always had to have 2 meats, 4 vegetables, sometimes more than 1 dessert.
And did she do the cooking herself?
Oh, yes.
Did she have a maid?
Well, she had a housekeeper, but she did the cooking. She was a fantastic cook.
I asked Bill if she'd ever talked about perhaps historically significant times in the young city.
The one thing that my great-grandmother talked about is what happened when statehood came. Because Oklahoma Territory, you had the sale of alcoholic beverages. Indian Territory was totally dry. But when the state became a state, the two territories were merged, and alcohol became illegal in Oklahoma until 1959. But on the last night of the territory, all the saloons in Norman opened up for free. They had to get rid of the liquor. And then at midnight, they had to pour it out. And people were there with pots and pans and everything to get what was going to be poured out.
That's hysterical. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did you get the impression that your great-grandmother liked living in Norman?
Oh, yes. She enjoyed it.
Thanks so much to Bill Wantland and all of the contributors to today's episode, including reader Robbie Korth, plus Mike Tower. The Moore Lindsay Historical House Museum is, of course, open to the public, and I've put a link to it on this episode's webpage. Search for KGOU and How Curious. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. The managing editor is Logan Layden, David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. As ever, if you have an idea for a future episode, I'd love to hear about it. You can reach me at curious@kgou.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.